Welcome to That Entrepreneur Life, a podcast about entrepreneurship that takes you from idea to launch and beyond. Each week, your hosts, Andrew Lees and Clint McPherson, discuss different business topics aimed at adding value to any entrepreneur's journey.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of That Entrepreneur Life. I'm Andrew Lees, and I'm usually joined by my co-host, Clint McPherson, but today I'm flying solo. I'm really excited to welcome our special guest, Evan Knox, to the show. How's it going, Evan?
Hey, Andrew. Thanks so much for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm really honored to have you on the show today. Before we get into everything, can you just tell our audience who you are and what you're all about?
Yeah, all about. That's a tough one. I am the founder of Caffeine Marketing. We make marketing profitable for small companies that are doing less than $25 million a year in annual revenue. I'm also a partner and CMO of a group called Tactos. And we basically acquire businesses and rapidly grow them.
That's awesome. That's very cool. How did you get into Tactos? You know, is that something you wanted to kind of, did you want to invest? Are you investing in companies or how does that work?
Yes. And so our model is acquire, grow, sell. And okay. So the acquire part, there's a couple of different ways that we can do that. I've got a really awesome team of partners that are really, you know, skilled at deal making. So sometimes we'll just buy the company outright. That happens. Okay. Other times we'll come in as like a partner in the company and then earn like additional equity into the company based off performance or some combination of the both. So yeah, it really all kind of depends, but it's good.
That's awesome. And what are the kind of companies that you're working with, you know, with those partnerships?
Yeah. So generally they're all small businesses. And I use that term relative, like let's say they're doing around $1 million, generally less than like 10 million or so. And for whatever reason, they've kind of plateaued in growth or they don't really have strategic partners in the US. So generally like the founder has taken it as far as it will go, but they don't have the capacity. They don't have the knowledge. Maybe they've never taken a company public before. Never done like a board of directors or phantom stock, or they don't have a marketing background. They've gotten this far without marketing. So generally there's some thing that's missing that they really just need like partners. Like they need instead of just doing it on their own, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand that. I'm sure a lot of our listeners can relate to that too, is, you know, at some point everybody has a limit where they feel like they kind of can't take it any further, or They just don't have the time to figure out how to take it any further. So I think at one point or another, we can all use a bit of a boost, whether that's just some consulting advice or whether that's, you know, actually partnering up with somebody who knows how to take it to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been really, just rewarding overall. Like in the times that we've acquired a company, like we've seen that owner's dream realized, like they wanted to acquire, you know, build a business and then sell it. And then in that way, other business owners have struggled for so long and for so many years, but then we come in, we're able to put better systems and processes and a better marketing funnel in place. And then all of a sudden, you know, like for example, September for one of our clients is a 729% increase in profit from the previous year. So it's just really cool to see the optimism and the hope, because generally when they come to us, they're kind of like, I don't know, it's kind of tough, you know, stagnant or decreasing growth. So
yeah, that's awesome. That's got to feel good to be able to turn things around for business and really help them get to the next level. And then you're learning as you go too. So every subsequent client, right, you can probably help them that much better. So that's very cool.
Yeah. It's awesome. And sometimes I even, I'm super thankful that obviously for all the training and, you know, experience and stuff like that I've had. But also I'll just be like on one Slack channel and there's like a dozen Slack channels, right, between the different companies. And so I'll like be on one, I'll see an idea there and I'll be like, hey guys, we should do this, you know, and I'll just trade between all of them. So they make each other better for sure.
That's awesome. Yeah. And there's an advantage to having that network and that group of companies and entrepreneurs that you're working with, right? I mean, I think that's one piece of advice that we hear a lot on the show is, you know, is get a mentor or, you know, join a network of like-minded entrepreneurs. Cause you know, we can't kind of, it doesn't make sense to try and do all this ourselves and shoulder it all ourselves. There's little nuggets of information out there that might seem very simple, but you might not have thought about it on your own, you know, and like you have this aha moment. And not only that, but more importantly, you see something actually work for somebody else. And then, and that's when it really, like, you may have thought about doing, you know, implementing some change. But until you actually see it working for somebody, you're not really sure. You're like, well, I could waste a ton of time on this and it might not get me anywhere. But once you see somebody else implement it, works for them, then you're like, oh man, I'm in. So that's cool because you can share those experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know this because you've got a partner in one of your businesses. I've been so thankful for the partnership. So Caffeine Marketing, it's just me. I'm a single owner of that, which is really great. And there's a ton of benefits that comes from that. But with the Tactos Group, having partners, it adds so much life to the business because you've got multiple people that are there to make it succeed. So I really do enjoy that part.
Very cool. So Evan, can you take us back to when your entrepreneurial journey started and what is it about entrepreneurship that gets you excited?
So I don't want to sound cliche, but I was definitely that kid that was like selling lemonade and golf balls. Like I would go down the golf course and we lived on a golf course, which, you know, sounds bougie or whatever. But we can get to later in my story when that was not the case. Yeah. But anyway, long story short is that like, I'd like go get golf balls and then go to the, our fence line and like go sell them back to golfers. You know what I mean?
That's awesome. We actually had another guest a few months ago who did the exact same thing. He was fishing them out of the ponds or like out of the, you know, water traps or whatever and selling them back to golfers. So that's really funny.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I remember, so then it progressed, it got bigger as I became a teenager. And so started mowing people's lawns and then started, quote, contracting out my friends to go mow the lawns that I had gotten deal on.
Okay. True entrepreneur there.
Right. And I look back and I was like, well, I never pay taxes on any of that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even know that I needed to though, because I was probably about, like below that income threshold. But just something like that. You know what I mean? That solidified for me that, hey, this is possible if you work at it, if you're teachable, if you research stuff, you can learn and grow. And then my dad and my grandfather were also business owners. So they weren't true entrepreneurs in the sense that they would like, you know, start multiple companies and sell some of them or exit or whatever. But they were business owners. And so that to me was very normal. You know, that was like totally an option. I was like, oh, I could go start my own thing one day. Like not a big deal. So
yeah, and I think having that base, that foundation helps, right? Is like, if you're not exposed to that at all, then you don't really know it's an option. You don't really, you know, you might, you know, realize that it's an option, but you're not necessarily comfortable with the thought of going off on your own. So
It's crazy. My wife is, super sweet and awesome. But she was telling me, she's like, it's just crazy to think that I'm married to somebody that owns her own business because she could never wrap her mind around that. Like her entire family, you know, worked in Detroit, worked at a factory, you know, worked at a hospital, all this stuff. And so to her, the concept was completely foreign. And so it's just kind of fun, but yeah, it's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, definitely. It's definitely in contrast to the philosophy of, you know, working a 9-to-5, you know, and 5 days a week and 30 years. And that's, you know, then you retire. And I mean, it's just, there's so many different opportunities now. I mean, I had one grandfather, he was an entrepreneur. He had his own business, an engineering consulting firm. And then my other grandfather worked for, he did some real estate after he retired, but he worked for Caterpillar Tractor for his entire career. And you know, he worked his way up, in CAT. But he, you know, he very much, you know, worked for somebody else and he worked for one company. And like, that's how, That's how a lot of people did it. Oh yeah, definitely. You can't, even if you are an employee now, that's like unheard of. You know, people bounce around. There's no loyalty on either side, I would say. You know, I mean, generally speaking, there's plenty of people and companies who have loyalty, but yeah, now there's so many more opportunities, especially with the internet, right? To create wealth through selling products online, selling info products and services. It's so much easier to reach people, or it's so much more accessible. I shouldn't say easy, because as you know, it's not necessarily easy to reach people online. It's just more opportunity to do it.
Right. And I almost think of like now is the easiest time to become like a six-figure, seven-figure business owner. I think the moat is so much shallower and it's so much less difficult to like start a business and scale and grow a business thanks to digital marketing and the internet and the decentralization of like knowledge. Mm-hmm. But I do think that it's harder to really grow like a Sears or a Walmart or whatever.
Okay.
Because there's so much more competition. You know what I mean? Like if you start a marketing agency, well, I mean, anybody can go do that. Like it's super simple nowadays. So.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. Because you kind of, because of the decentralization, which allows you to get to, allows more people to get a little further. It allows fewer people to break through and actually, you know, take a larger piece of the market share, because there's so much competition. There's so many, you know, people, you know, selling online and selling digital marketing services. And there's a lot of things that are pretty saturated, but then it's really cool when you come across something that isn't very well saturated, you know, and you find an opportunity where you didn't really think there would be, but it's just sort of untapped for whatever reason. And if you can get in, that's where the real, you know, that's where you can really make some money.
Right. And it's, I mean, you're familiar. I know you are, but like this, blue and red ocean, like this idea that, in a red ocean, there's plenty of sharks because there's plenty of, it's just a really crowded, there's already fish there. And there's a ton of people that are, you know, fighting for the same market share. But a blue ocean product is one that there's not a lot of competition. So the ocean water is blue, you know, for the fish out there. So, but I would be really interested to know if any of that, because all of that's just Evan's opinion. I don't know if any of that's actually true, but that's just my guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, we'll have to have, you know, some listeners get some feedback on that, but yeah, so we love that you're passionate about sharing actionable advice for how to grow a business with a good marketing strategy. Can you talk about the strategy that you use to double your sale or double your revenue year over year for the last 3 years?
Yeah. So for Caffeine, I think of this as like my business, almost like business owner framework. So, or the CEO framework. Because in my opinion, it's not just about marketing or sales or margins or whatever. And this has really become true as we've acquired more businesses. It ultimately comes down to the leader and that leader's willingness to invest back into the company, to invest back in himself, his employees, and to essentially, I kind of mentioned it earlier, but like decentralize command and empower other people to make decisions. Like a lot of these businesses have an incredible product, but they've got a business owner who has a scarcity mindset or micromanages everything. So they never get beyond 15 employees or a certain number in revenue because they just don't let decisions go. So that framework that I've used has to do really with self leadership and then the actual business. So the actual business part is finance, marketing, operations, all that jazz. But the self part is nutrition, it's fitness, it's sleep. And then leadership is ultimately about emotional intelligence and caring about people and how to actually lead teams really well. So in my opinion, that's the three things that I think are most helpful. But marketing, I would just simplify to brand awareness, consideration, conversion. So if we were, and this is, everybody says there's a certain number of steps in a funnel and everybody's probably right in some level. But I like to think of it just in steps of three because it's easier to me. So brand awareness, You got to make people aware that you exist. Right. And then consideration, you have to reinforce what problem it is that you solve. And then lastly, conversion is making it as easy as possible for people to buy your products and services.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm sure some people are familiar with sales funnels and obviously with websites. I mean, a sales funnel is just like a landing page or a website that is more geared towards driving a conversion or generating a lead, right? So people are probably kind of familiar with that. And we can dig into that a little bit, but the first thing is awareness. And that's the trickiest thing, right? I think, how do you get people to know about you in the first place? And there's so many, you know, there's so many different, it kind of leads me to my next question, actually. I was about to ask it twice, but, you know, there's plenty of overwhelming moments as an entrepreneur where we feel pulled in too many directions, especially with marketing and sales. What would you say to somebody who's feeling that way and what can they do about it, especially with like as it relates to the ways in which you can build awareness about your company?
Okay. So first off, that feeling happens at all stages of the business. Like you're just like, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
What are we doing here? So when you're first starting your business, I think obviously your biggest problem is brand awareness. Like people don't even know that your product exists. I'm sure that you experienced that just out of like the actual process of a business. So making people aware that you exist can be an overwhelming task because there's so many different ways to do it. It's hard to know what's the most effective, but I personally like to build a sales funnel, and I just call a sales funnel everything below advertising. So, you know, that's the website. It's a lead gen on your PDF or lead gen PDF on your website or a discount code, an email series, follow-up SMS text messages or whatever. So I like to build all that stuff before we really start doing advertising, but mm-hmm. sometimes you have to get the advertising going to pay for all the other stuff. So, anyway, with the advertising, yeah. My personal favorite is Facebook. And then probably Google ads and LinkedIn ads would be my tied for a second. And it really okay. just depends on the type of business, I would say, for those two.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think while every business has, you know, there's similar ways, like there's always some overlap of how you reach people with any business, but every business is different, right? So what works, there's some products, let's say, that could work really well with Facebook ads, and doing a lot of, you know, getting a lot of social engagement. There's a product that I developed. It's a fishing product called Catch a Lure. And it helps you get your lure back or your fly back if you're fly fishing, if you get it stuck in a tree, which apparently I'm not a fisherman myself really, but apparently it happens to like everybody. It's a really prolific problem. And people just usually, you know, cut their line and they leave their lure in the tree or the bush or whatever. And that's it. But this little device helps you get it back. And it's crazy because I looked at, for this client, I looked at, you know, trying to help him grow his awareness. And so we looked at search terms on Google and what people were searching for relevant to, you know, were they actually asking Google for the solution to this problem that the product, you know, provided the solution for. And like, nobody's searching for it. There's very, very little search volume around getting a fly or a lure back on Google. But like every fisherman has experienced this, especially yeah. fly fishermen. So it's like the market is a good solid, you know, multi-million user market. But nobody's looking for it. So you kind of have to hit them higher up in the funnel. And then do something like a Facebook ad or just do consistent posting on, you know, on social or create some really great content that would help your target audience. And then, you know, draws them in and you've got a lead magnet or whatever to get leads and generate sales. So yeah, everything is different. What's your, what's like the best, what's your go-to, you know, do you like, do you really dig into ads first and help like accelerate the testing and of your funnel, or do you kind of prime everything with content and generating, you know, more sustainable long-term type leads?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because as you were talking about Catch a Lure, I went and Googled it and then also sent it to one of my business partners who's a fly fishing guide, and we co-own a fly fishing guide business together.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, actually I saw that on your website. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So I can tell you, as somebody who's not a great fly fisherman, all the time when we go out, yeah, like at least twice, you know, I mean, he's cutting a line and retying it for me. So
yeah,
maybe this little device could be super helpful for him. But yes, yeah, that was a perfect example of a product that really fits a need, but yet nobody's searching for it. So, because they don't know it. So I love that for Facebook. That's a perfect example, and could see how that could be really successful.
Yeah.
I personally, it is like an ideal, right? So if they already have advertising, of course, like let's dig into their advertising and better try to optimize for conversions. We have a framework that we use within advertising that I feel like is a really simplified campaign structure, and it works really well. But okay. I like to start with messaging. So we start with messaging, and then we use a framework called StoryBrand, and I'm a StoryBrand certified guide, which means I'm essentially licensed to use this framework in our clients' marketing. And when we create that messaging framework, that same messaging will go across their website, their sales funnel, their advertising, their emails, their sales calls, their videos, all of their assets, so that it's reinforcing the same messaging over and over again as somebody goes along like the sales funnel or marketing funnel journey. So that would probably be our specialty, is using that sales, that story brand framework in order to actually execute our marketing for our clients.
I gotcha. That's awesome. And I think that has to do, you know, that has a lot to do with creating a brand and creating consistency, right? Because I think that's something that it seems when you see it work well, when you see a company who's just well-branded like Apple or Tesla or something, you know, like, you look at it and it just makes sense. It seems simple. It almost seems easy, but to get everything really consistent across all channels and get your messaging to be consistent, I think is a little harder. And also not oversimplify it too. Like you can easily be, you can easily try to be consistent and just, you know, stick to very, very simple. And sometimes it's like too simple. You're not quite giving enough information that's convincing to customers.
Yeah, I agree. And there's some, I would say that I'm just going to make up a random number here. 85% of businesses overcomplicate it, or they're trying to be cute and clever. And so like a client comes to mind and they're called Finisec. And essentially they're a cybersecurity solution for banks, like smaller banks, not like Wells Fargo, but like your local community bank. And it's incredibly complex what they do. And they're super smart. Their entire team is super bright, but they all speak cybersecurity jargon. And the person that they're trying to sell to is the president of that bank. And he is not a cybersecurity expert. Mm-hmm. And so they need to dumb it down so much so that a fifth grader could understand it. And then at that point, then it becomes a solution to a problem that person's experiencing. And that's what I like about the Catch a Lure, right? I mean, this is super simple. You're like, oh, get stuck in a tree. Got to get it out.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, yeah. Do you want to never lose your fly or lure again? Like that's kind of it. It can be as simple as that, you know? And it's like, oh, well, yeah, I don't want to lose it. Yeah. And then there's like the odd people who are like, nah, just cut the line and that's it. And it's like, all right, that's you're going to waste, you know, money, right? But because you're going to have to continue to buy new lures and flies. And also you're just junking up the environment. Like birds are getting hung up on, you know, on hooks and stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's just a really, really simple message. But I think that the thing actually that Catch a Lure still struggles with, is really like their conversion is great for the traffic that they get to the website. Conversion is great because it is such a, it's such a simple product. It's, I think the website does a pretty good job of explaining what it is. It could probably be cleaned up a little bit. But it, you know, it's the call to action makes sense. And so the conversion is pretty good, but just getting those people in the first place is so, can be so painful. And I think that's still something that, you know, that they struggle with, as you know, and they're not alone, I know. So I think it's a combination of content and probably outreach and partnering with, you know, with companies, but really, and sometimes advertising isn't enough. You know, I think actually this is interesting because for a product like Catchalure, or even like we were talking about my product line, GrassRacks offline, they're both product lines that it's people are buying once and that's it for the most part, right? So the lifetime value isn't like multiple sales stacked up over months and years. It's like you get, you know, you have to get a good ROI coming in for that ad spend, and it has to be pretty, you know, you can't lose money or break even on that first sale hoping that you're going to get another one, right? So I think, you know, what would your advice be with something like that? Is it in that case, are you really, do you have to lean on lead generation and making sure that if you're not getting a sale from your ad, that you're at least getting an email from somebody? Would that be your strategy there?
Yeah, that's tough. It reminds me of a couple of our clients, right? Because you have, and GrassRacks is a little bit different because you've got a little bit higher price point, which makes me feel like you've got, I don't say percentage margin, but at least total margin to acquire a new customer. Whereas
right. It definitely helps.
Yeah. Whereas the Catchalure, you've got a $20 item when the average cost per acquisition is a little over $20, on Facebook ads. So like just across the board, I mean, that's tough. And that's not to say it can't be done, but it's tough. So I would consider it's also tough because you don't want to necessarily raise the price too far. Mm-hmm. I don't imagine shipping cost a lot for this.
No, it's pretty cheap. Yeah, it's really cheap. Yeah, a couple bucks.
Okay. All right. So what I would probably optimize the homepage a little bit. I mean, it's pretty decent for a pretty simple product catalog. But I would talk about the three benefits. So like, pays for itself within three uses or something like that. You know, save the environment, preserve the natural environment, and then some other benefit that they would, you know, lifetime warranty or something like that. And I think that would further increase conversions. And then I would play around also with, a post-purchase upsell. So whatever you could do to increase the customer lifetime value. So if that's like a course, if that's additional products, if that's selling products that are not necessarily exactly Catchalure, but like sister brands, like if you could get partner with another brand, list their products on your site and vice versa, and do like a pretty good like wholesale price for one another, just basically to get more margin and more room to play with so that you could actually profitably acquire customers. And then I would really do like something that I've been playing with lately is adding a really big discount after people have dropped off. So like if they haven't bought after 14 days or 30 days, you've pretty much lost them anyway. So you might as well just swing for the fences. Like you might as well just give them your very best offer and see if you can recoup of a couple dollars of your advertising budget. So I think that is another, you know, good way to do that. And I also think that GrassRacks, it's like they could fall in love with the product. And so maybe there's like referral. Maybe there is outfit your whole home. Maybe there's kits. You might be able to do a little bit more with GrassRacks.
Yeah, I got you. So that's, yeah, it's an interesting strategy is to figure out ways to increase the order value, and which would increase that lifetime value. I know with Catchalure, they've done, basically trying to push two sales for every, purchase, or they're trying to get the order value up to like $40 at least, mm-hmm. By incentivizing somebody to buy two products instead of one. Cause every fisherman, if you're a fisherman, other fishermen. So, it makes sense that you might want to share this thing. And the same thing with grass racks. So, I think I've definitely seen that where, it can make a big difference to get people talking. I mean, it always makes a huge difference to get people talking about your product or service. And if you can incentivize them to do that, which isn't necessarily easy, that's very powerful, because you can turn your customers into advocates. But you really have to make it, first of all, from what I've seen, you've got to make it very, very, very simple for somebody to do, and painless. And sometimes just trying to get them to share on social might not be the best, because they, people are a little weird about that you just bought flip flops and do you really want to share that on Instagram? Who cares? Right. But I mean, I think there's some people who would be cool with that. And then other people who are just like, I'm not going to do that. I might tell my friend about it, but I'm, not going to just throw that out there to the world.
Yeah. 100%. And I'm looking at grass racks and I'm thinking to myself, man, the person that loves wine, actually let's reverse that, because I don't know if that's true. The person who kayaks probably also could paddleboard and also probably has some sort of snow gear, mm-hmm. some sort of snowboard or ski rack that they need. So I think a post-purchase would be super interesting. So what I would do is I would play around, what's the best first product to sell? So I would try selling different products as an entryway into the business. And try each one for like a week, running almost an identical campaign for a week and do every single product, mm-hmm. see which one performs the best at the same budget, the same audience. And then once you have that, then turn around and try to sell the other products after that. So that essentially it's like, I already bought the wine rack. Why would I not buy the shelf? Or, the garage, I totally do need that, whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah.
But there might be one product they buy first.
Gotcha. Yeah. And figure out what that is first. And then also figure out what product responds the best to ads, maybe. And then kind of use the top two or three as like the beachhead to get in and acquire customers and then get that repeat customer or get that repeat order up from people. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. And I think that, I see the, obviously you've got to showcase the rack, but I would spend a couple $100 and just get like a really good photographer and just have them do some product photography for you. And then mm-hmm. make all of the images the same dimensions, so it looks super clean.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great point. We've sort of, our product photography has kind of evolved over the years. It was pretty rough in the beginning. We did get a photographer for our first like line of products, and she was great, but she wasn't really a product photographer. And actually what we've learned is, with grass racks in particular, which I'm sure there's a lot of other products that, fit this category, is they're kind of difficult to photograph, because you've got some of our products are relatively large, and then you've got these, what they do is store gear like surfboards and wakeboards and paddle boards, big equipment. So like getting everything in frame and focusing on the actual product and not the boards has kind of been a challenge. Like we can't just throw our racks into a light box, which would be awesome, but we need a pretty large light box. So that's great advice. Awesome, man. Well, that's cool to just go through that. Use grass racks and catch lure as kind of case studies. We're kind of digging deep there with some marketing strategy and some different things that could be, you know, you could be doing. But, you know, if you're listening and you're, hopefully it's, you know, it's sparking some, you know, sparking some ideas and kind of giving you ideas about what you might be able to do with your own product or even your own service. You know, a lot of, you can use a sales funnel, for instance, for either a product or a service. And, you know, so there's a lot of overlap with different businesses. So Evan, what kind of clients do you typically work with? And do you have like a favorite type of product or service you like to market?
So my two favorites are either e-commerce or B2B. Okay. E-commerce is really easy because once you've got a winning funnel, it's really easy to scale. As long as, you know, Facebook doesn't act crazy for some reason, or Google acts crazy. Yeah. And then the other one would be B2B. And I really love B2B because once you have, I mean, honestly, you've got so much more margin to play with. You've got several thousand dollars generally for a deal. And so if you can acquire a company, if you can acquire a client for $1,000 for a company, or even $5,000, if they have $10,000 in margin, do that all day. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why those are our two favorites, is e-commerce, otherwise known as online businesses, or B2B, just because they have higher ticket sales.
Yeah. How about something kind of in between, like a course, an online course, or like an info product where the ticket value can be high? You know, it could be several thousand dollars because you're giving a ton of, you know, help. Like somebody could use that information. Like, let's say, you know, it's a $1,000 course. They might be able to use that information and generate $10,000 a month in recurring revenue. And so that $1,000 is like, you know, an amazing investment for them. But it's obviously like a relatively high ticket price. So, you know, is that kind of like a really nice sweet spot if you can figure out how to have that kind of product?
So courses are interesting. We've got two or three course clients right now. And what I've seen is that there's either, it really comes a lot down to product fit, and then advertising can deliver that to the next level, or it is just kind of, you're barely getting by. So there has to be a really good product fit, and then positioning is also super important. So that client that I kind of alluded to that was like doing okay, basically breaking even right now. We think that there's a product positioning like issue. So there's two bigger players in the space who are really well established, like featured on all kinds of news outlets, like super high end, selling for the same price. So it's hard for her to compete in that regard. And so we're trying different pricing. We're also trying, how do we position her product so that it's unique? And the last thing I would say is that we're going to shift in because the messaging was created before Caffeine started working with them, but we're going to shift from essentially selling features and what they're going to learn in the course to what are they actually going to get. So in this case, it has to do with like essentially babies. So like how to, and I've got a 14, 15 month old right now. So, I feel it, but like I guess my thought process is, and why we're like shifting on this account, is that instead of selling, oh, you're going to learn all this stuff about how to care for your baby, it's like, no, we have to solve a problem. And what's that problem? You don't feel confident in raising your kid. Okay, we're going to give you confidence to raise your baby well, or something like that. But it has to solve a problem and be an actual benefit, not the actual features of what they're going to learn. If that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that you see that a lot with products and services where the features are advertised and promoted, instead of what those features actually do, how they can help you, because the feature might be totally meaningless to you if you're not making the connection to, okay, cool, how does that help? You know, like if we're talking about, just to jump back to grass racks for a second, it's, you know, our racks are made from super strong bamboo plywood. That's great. but why does that matter to our customers? The what matters to them is that they're, you know, that they're giant paddleboard, their race paddleboard, and they might put three of them on one of our racks. You know, they care because they don't want those, all those paddle boards come crashing down. So it's strong because it keeps your boards from flying off the wall, and that's a better connection probably. So yeah, that's interesting. When, and you, it's a subtle difference, but it really makes a huge difference.
Yeah. And I think of it often as how people, and I have to remind myself that people think of this in regards to my own services, like with caffeine. Mm-hmm. So they're not looking for a sales funnel, a new website or Facebook ads. What they're looking for is marketing that's profitable and for a predictable way to scale and grow their company. So we're all guilty of this, but we have to clearly explain what it is we do and what's the benefit of our products or our services, and pitch the benefits after we mention how we go about doing that, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, you can have both of them there at the same time, but it makes sense. But you have to make that connection and explain to people what they're getting and why they're getting it. I like that. So through your entrepreneurial journey, Evan, from the highs to the lows, what has been the most difficult thing about being an entrepreneur?
Well, I think it is balancing. Well, I'll just say for me, the most difficult thing that I had to do was balancing paying off student loan debt while also growing the company. At a macro level, I don't think that that's the most difficult part about being an entrepreneur. Not saying that. But for me, tactically, the thing that was the hardest would probably be that. So in the first, when we got married, my wife had, you know, graduated college at Michigan State. I think it was like $90,000 in student loan debt. And so we started caffeine, or I started caffeine like year two of our marriage. And so we were trying to pay all of that off. We paid all of it off in 3 years, but it was hard for me to balance what do I reinvest back into the company and what do I pay off in debt? How do we live? Yeah. So that was, I would say for me, that was the hardest thing to balance, I would say.
I gotcha. Yeah. And that could, if unchecked, that could lead to that scarcity mindset that you were, I think that you were mentioning before, because then you sort of are, in, you can be in survival mode, right? Where you're just like, okay, I need every single dollar that's coming in. It's got to go into my bank account. Cause like I have to pay for things. And I've definitely been there where I'm like, I can't reinvest right now into my business because I literally have personal bills that I have to pay. And that's the reason that I have a business, right? Is ultimately is so that I can get paid. And so I can, you know, so that I can actually pay my bills. But I, at the same time, I don't want to just create a job for myself. You want it to grow, right? So at some point you really have to figure out, even if it's a little bit, putting a little bit, investing in the right things, and whether it's advertising or content generation or management or whatever, or just tools to help you. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And it almost like, I think I would rather lean a little bit on the, shrewd side or, you know, financially conservative side of spending money. Mm-hmm. However, if you have to know where you land, you know what I mean? If you're the person that's just kind of throw money and wherever, like taper it back a little bit and be a little more strategic. Or if you're more scarcity mindset, then it's like, no, you need to like, you got to believe that there's enough out there and you got to believe that you're going to make this work. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, everybody's going to balance it their own way, but yeah, I think it's super worth it. Cause just like you mentioned, I don't want a job. I didn't do this to get a job.
Right. Like, right.
I want to be able to stop working whenever I want and go take a vacation or spend time with my family or what have you. So
yep.
Fun.
Yeah, I hear you. I think there's kind of two levels to the entrepreneurship thing. The first thing is, to me at least, was my first goal was to quit my job, work for myself, be more flexible. And I do have more flexibility, but I end up working way more than I did at a job, like no doubt, but I'm okay with that. I'm happy with that. But then the next level, then when you get comfortable with that, it's kind of like, okay, I don't want to do this forever. I don't want to work, you know, 10, 12 hours a day and on the weekends forever. So, and that's that becomes, at some point, that's like not the point of being an entrepreneur. The point of being an entrepreneur is to, you know, is really, I think, to build a business and have people around, people and resources and tools around you that can help grow it. And then, you know, at some point you might sell it, but you don't want to be working in your business. You want to be working on your business, which is a quote I've heard. I can't remember where that came from, but I think it's kind of like a guiding principle. You know, when you feel like you're too in the weeds, there's always plenty to do where you feel like you're like really far in it. You know, for my product development company, I know that if I'm really in the weeds of a design and I'm working, you know, hours on end trying to figure out a design, I know that that's time that I'm not growing my business. And so you got to kind of figure out that balance.
Yeah. And I think for me, like I'm thankful that I'm at the stage where I've got most of the flexibility that I want. I couldn't just disappear right now the way that I've set up my business for 2 weeks. But I could pretty much work 30 minutes a day for 2 weeks and it would be fine. However, the thing that I would want now beyond the flexibility would be just like have passive investments. Like I've done a little bit of real estate now. I love business and I would still do business for fun, even if I wasn't like, I didn't need to. But I realized I did not want to do active real estate anymore. So I'm looking, I have enough capital that my dividends pay for everything. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's my next goal, I feel like.
Exactly. That's it. Yeah. I think it's just, you know, it comes in stages. You figure out what, you know, you need to do to make each stage work for you. You need to figure out how to just make the business work, and you need to make sure that you can pay the bills and survive. Then you can kind of figure out, all right, what are the systems that I can put in place that will allow me to step away from it? And the sooner you can put those systems in place, the better. You know, if you can implement systems that allow you to step away from the business from like day one, then by all means, I think that's the way to do it. But, you know, sometimes we don't have that luxury, you know, and it's like, all right, well, you know, I need to do this job that I'm not super excited about, but gotta pay the bills. So let's go. But then at some point you can kind of figure out, you know, how you can build a team around you and resources and, you know, make things more streamlined.
Yep. I totally agree. One thing I would caution business owners out there is don't be a friend of mine who shall not be named. He was telling me about his business and he was like, yeah, man, things are going great. Like we just hit $1 million in revenue, all this stuff. And I was like, wow, that's awesome, man. I said, this is legit. And I know him a little better. So I was like, what was your take home? Like, what was your take home profit? And he was like, and he kind of like looked down, he's like $30,000. And I was like, shut your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
you're dealing with a headache of $1 million in expenses and you are only taking $30,000, like one bad month and you don't take home anything, you know?
Oh, I mean? Yeah. Yeah. You're so, exactly.
Yeah. Don't add a lot of extra crap you don't need. That's what I would say.
Yeah. I love that. And you do see that, I think, with, I'm sure there's businesses out there that, man, it looks great. You know, they might be like, you know, check out my revenue of 80K a month. And like, that's awesome. But how much did it cost to get you that? You know, like you can have just about anything and sell it. And first of all, there's two things. You can spend a ton in ads, or you can spend, or whatever it is, whatever, you know, marketing method it is, like paid marketing, you can spend a lot to get those sales. And the other thing you can do, which I've seen on the other side is this happens, I think, a lot with like salespeople and reps where they mark down prices and they get all these sales. Same thing can happen, you know, online. constantly putting everything on sale for 20, 30, 40% off, and then you're not left with anything. It's like, yeah, anybody can sell something for less money. That's not hard, you know?
Yeah. So
yeah, you make it practically free, and like there's no, you know, there's no skill involved in sales then. So yeah, I totally agree. Is it really at the end of the day, actually one probably a good exercise is to figure out, do a calculation of what your business would be valued at, because that takes into account your, yep, your revenue minus costs, you know, your net profit, and a bunch of different ways to calculate the value, but just to get a rough idea. If you're like, for your buddy, if he's doing $1 million in sales and spending $970,000 to get that, well, then, you know, the value is about probably $30,000, $40,000, maybe $50,000 for that business that's doing $1 million in sales.
It's crazy.
So you got to be careful of that.
Well, I was going to say, like, there's three businesses that we've acquired, and one we just acquired, and we probably wouldn't have acquired, but we've been negotiating since March. And I won't say the date. I don't want to date the podcast, but it's the end of the year. So we just closed on it. And so we would not buy this business beforehand. Like, we would not do it because it's like $100,000 like in deficit every year. And so we're just like,
oh wow.
And it's a crazy big business. Like, I'm not actually crazy big. It's still a small business, but it's a crazy big small business. And it's a pretty well-known brand. And that's why we're acquiring it, is because we really like the brand. You would be surprised. There's a lot of businesses out there that are not, something happens like a pandemic and it's over. So
yeah, exactly. For sure. I think I'd rather grow a little slower, but grow sustainably and, you know, figure out how to get, you know, ultimately figure out how to get your costs as low as you can, like your cost of goods, and then lower your acquisition costs over time, you know, but not just like spend a ton to make a ton. And, you know, just that doesn't necessarily lead to good long-term sustainable growth. So that's crazy. Well, you might have already answered this as we've gone along, but, you know, as we wrap up the episode, if you could only leave our listeners with one piece of advice, what would that be?
Can I do one business and one personal advice?
Totally. Yeah.
All right. So my marketing advice would be, don't play the hero of your own marketing messaging. Play the role of a guide. That story brand framework teaches you how to do it. Big fan of it. So yeah, go out there and be the guide for somebody else with your products and services. And then yeah, it's super good. I didn't come up with it. So, but the next one would be focus on what matters 100 years from now. So honestly, if a proposal goes through or if it doesn't, it's really not the end of the world 100 years from now. And so it's little small stuff like that, that I don't get too caught up in. Cause it really doesn't matter 100 years from now to me. So that is probably gonna be different for each person, but I would say, just ask yourself, does this really matter 100 years from now, and figure out what does matter to you.
I love that. You know, it's like when you're gone, does this matter? You know, or maybe we won't be gone in 100 years. Who knows? There's, you know, science and healthcare are evolving rapidly, but I mean, yeah, that's really cool. Is that, I think that helps put things in perspective. That's awesome.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. It was great to have you. Guys, I think that's a wrap for this episode. I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day, Evan, to join us as we, in adding value to what we are doing on our podcast. Thanks for being here, man. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening to That Entrepreneur Life. To learn more about what Evan's working on, check out caffeine.marketing. If you like what you heard today, make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or any other major podcast directory. You can also find us on all the socials and on our website at thatentrepreneurlife.com. With that said, we want to quickly give a special shout out to our family and friends, to include all of our listeners, followers, and subscribers. Thanks for continuing to support what we do as entrepreneurs. And don't forget to join us next week for another episode of That Entrepreneur Life.
Thanks for listening to That Entrepreneur Life podcast. Be sure to visit thatentrepreneurlife.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover our fantastic bonus content. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode as we continue to add value. Until next time.